Japan commemorated the 80th anniversary of the U.S. nuclear bombing of Hiroshima today, the only country in the world to have used an atomic weapon against another nation. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Welcome to Africa Now. Today's show features On Fanon with Kenya Organic Intellectuals, Part 2. Africa Now is next. Welcome to the show. I'm Wisdom Ntali. The music in the background is Skokie Ann by Louis Armstrong, commemorating his birthday, which was on August 4th. First, I just want to take this opportunity to thank the listeners for supporting Don't Forget the Blues with Clarence the Bluesman Turner today during our summer pledge drive. Being solidarity with WPFW and Africa Now, our goal for this hour is $500. Call 202-588-9739 or visit WPFWFM.org or on our Cash App. That's the $ WPFWFM so that we can reach our goal and surpass it. The theme of WPFW's Summer Pledge Drive, which is from August 3rd to the 16th, is 48 years of centering blackness. We'll commemorate Black August and celebrate not only the freedom fighters, political prisoners, and those who have perished in the struggle for black liberation, but also the scholars, musicians, and poets whose work has served the black liberation struggle. There are forces working to erase the contributions and significance of black people. Your contribution ensures that WPFW is not erased and that the voices of black people throughout the diaspora continue to be platformed here. Be in solidarity with WPFW and Africa Now today to build a better world one broadcast at a time. Call today at 202-588-9739. That's 202-588-9739. Or visit WPFWFM.org and scroll down to Africa Now to make your summer pledge. Or go to our Cash App, which is the $WPFWFM, so that we can reach our goal of $500 and hopefully go beyond that. As we commemorate Black August, and centering with WPFW's Summer Pledge Drive's theme, and keeping in mind this critical time for the African world, and also this year being the year in which we commemorate the centennial birthdays of freedom fighters Malcolm X, Patrice Lumumba, Medgar Evers, and Frantz Fanon, Africa Now continues our series reflecting on Pan-Africanism and liberation. A few months ago, there was a reflection on Fanon. Then, as part of WPFW's special Malcolm X's 100th birthday commemoration on May 19th, and WPFW's special Patrice Lumumba's 100th birthday commemoration on July 2nd, we featured shows with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals. The shows focused on Malcolm X's and Patrice Lumumba's impact on the work of the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network. Continued Africa Now series with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network. Today we present part two of our discussion on Frantz Fanon's influence on his activist work. In part two of the conversation, we feature Wanjira Wahome, who is an organizer, political theorist, lawyer, member of the Mathari Social Justice Center, the Communist Party of Kenya, as well as the Kenyan Organic Intellectuals Network. Also in the conversation is Nicholas Mwangi, a member of the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network and is part of the Ukombozi Library. The discussion explores the continuities and movements in post-independence Kenya. The conversation also looks at using Fanon's complete theory in practice in movements today. Here is African Isles executive producer and co-host James Pope with the conversation.
Thank you for joining us today, Owinga. Could you just introduce yourself, what formations that you are a part of, and also talk a little bit about your politicization? You know, what is it that kind of sparked your political consciousness and the work that you're engaged in at this particular point?
Thank you very much for hosting me again on this platform. My name is Waringa Wahome. I am a lawyer in practice, but also a social justice defender. I think I come from Mathare Social Justice Center, and at Mathare Social Justice Center, I host a unit called the Legal Empowerment Hub. The Legal Empowerment Hub is a unit. It's a unit of Mathare Social Justice Center that comes together through Mathare Social Justice Center as an organization and my personal law firm, which is one of our company advocate, to form a legal empowerment hub that can be used, that can be able to change the conception of the law, and at least introduce a social justice jurisprudence or an alternative jurisprudence from the criminalization of poverty that we have experienced, from the normal criminal justice systems, you know, from law structures not working for the disenfranchised of our society. And I think the Legal Empowerment Hub seeks to use law as a tool for advancing social justice work and for building social justice movements. So movements look at how they can use the law to advance and build community agencies within themselves. So, for example, the Domestic Workers Network, which can be able to use the law as a tool to advance, you know, the struggles of domestic workers. You know, our Waste Speakers Network, Ecological Justice also can use the law as a tool to advance, you know, the struggles of the environment and how we can build an eco-socialist society. And, of course, we have a campaign against extrajudicial killings, which challenges police brutality. We have the housing question, and how land networks can use the law also to advance the critical question of land, of housing. And I think that's as much as I can use to introduce my organization. As far as what politicized me as an individual, I think I don't really have a story of how I was politicized. I came into politics because, I don't know, maybe because lawyers find their way into politics somehow. But I was captured by the salvation of Fanon, because now I would have found myself within bourgeois politics. But somehow I found myself in the social justice discussions, in the socialist discussions, and I think they continue to inspire me and inspire my development intellectually, organizationally, and I think also personally. And I think as I have continued to delve in the studies of building an alternative socialist society, and, you know, thinking about Pan-African ideas to, you know, to liberate myself as an individual, my people, and my Africa. I think I continue to be inspired by that line of politics that holds that we can build a society where we're all equal, as far as any poverty does not determine whether or not you will access quality healthcare, quality education, whether or not you will eat food, or whether or not you will die from a treatable disease. I think we all envision a society where we can live dignified lifestyles. And I think that continues to inspire my journey, and that continues to at least align with the correct line of politics.
Thank you for that. And, you know, and of course, I'll pull Nicholas into kind of like the conversation. But, you know, of course, we're talking about Frantz Fanon, and particularly the ideas, the frameworks and concepts that Frantz Fanon was thinking or dealing with in the context of a colonial and also the colonized and the colonizer. There's a particularity or a specificity or specific ideas that Fanon is dealing with: decolonization, violence, you know, this notion of a new society, land, the use of radio, the use of propaganda specifically by both colonized and the colonizer. So there's a number of particular thoughts and strands of frameworks that Fanon uses to understand or to provide some type of understanding of what colonization does at a very, very deep level. But he also has a very, you know, particular framework or idea of how the colonized should address those questions. You know, he wrote a number of treaties, a number of books on this particular topic. So how does Fanon show up? What are some of the specific ideas that Fanon presents? And how does Fanon kind of inform the work that you're doing, Rowinga, in this particular moment?
I think critically is that I organize within an informal settlement, one of the largest informal settlements here in Nairobi, which is most populated by Balon's favorite class of the Lumpens, where the Lumpen societies has been so advanced recently. And I think if there is something critical that he speaks about that we live in the reality of in our society now, is how the psychology of oppression affects people, psychologically, even in their capacity to fight and to defend their dignity, or to even be able to conceptualize that they're living in a small bubble of capitalism. I think because most people in my Mathare society have internalized violence. They have internalized the characteristics of the oppressed. They have made them, you know, they have adopted that fatalism as a trait, you know, in their everyday struggles. They have adopted horizontal violence among themselves, you know, trying to defend basic dignities by defending them in the wrong way. And I think the consciousness that Manon's introduces is, why have these people internalized poverty? Why have they internalized violence? Why have they internalized, you know, living in undignified lifestyles? How have they internalized them and made them a reality? In fact, they get to a point where they say, this is how I was born. It is the writing of the Lord. You know, not realizing that poverty itself is a man-made creation. And I think the injunction that Fanon introduces through his consciousness is that there can always be a different form of violence other than horizontal violence, that people can use their violence not to each other, but against an oppressive state. They can use it at that time against colonialism, but at this time, people can organize and use this horizontal violence, not towards each other, but against the neo-colonial state. You know, such kind of consciousness. And also the fact that we can change this despair that people have reached to, this state of despair. We can convert it through you know, colonial consciousness, that it can become hope. We can convert the despair that people can every day live in crime, every day live in drugs, you know, every day facing police brutality as if it's their every, you know, their daily norm. And we can convert this despair, we can convert this fatalism, we can convert this indecisiveness among, you know, the Lumpenite society of Mathare, for example, within also the social justice movement, which also organizes within these Lumpenite societies of different parts of Nairobi. For example, we have Mathare Social Justice Center, we have Kayole Community Justice Center, we have Dandora, Isorai, and then Mondi also comes from Dagoneti Community Justice Center. You know, all these communities that have internalized horizontal violence, that have internalized, you know, mode of oppression and become, you know, like a, adopted a fatalistic kind of tendencies. They can, I think, Pannonian consciousness helps a lot in advancing change and also helping with organizing people around this question of violence. And I think we can, I think as the conversation unfolds, we will look at, you know, what this revolutionary violence looks like. And also when Fanon talks about a Lumpenite society, what society we are describing and what futures we see within this Lumpenite society and what kind of force it produces, specifically here in Kenya. How Mathare, how other informal settlements, this Lumpenite society, how are they well positioned in a manner that when it comes to capturing political power, or when it comes to now, you know, advancing Fanonian thought on who constitutes the Lumpen class, I think when, as we continue advancing in that discussion, we realize that it is this class of the Lumpenite society that at this time in Kenya, I will hold, and in other parts of Africa, that has the biggest potent force of sparking even a working class consciousness, or even sparking a revolutionary consciousness among our people within our lifetime or within our time. Yeah.
Nicholas, you can jump in. There is, you know, two follow-ups. I would love to follow up, but if you want to jump in, you know, you could just raise your hand and I'll just jump right on in. Because there's two follow-ups I would definitely want to talk about. Go ahead, Nicholas.
Well, you wanted to go with the follow-up first or?
Yeah. So, you know, we're talking about, I like the position or the imposition, the Lumpen, right? There, Fanon has a particular, and so does Cabral, right? And the role of the different classes in society in revolution, right? The Lumpen, the bourgeoisie, you know, there is a particular role that Fanon is looking at, because what we're talking about ultimately is how do we develop a consciousness, a revolutionary critical consciousness to change, not only recognize what's happening in society, but to change society. So there has to be a certain level of a vision that needs to be put forth, right? You have a vision from, you know, the bottom You have a vision from the middle. And of course, we know the imperialists have a vision, right? So how do we understand, particularly because the communities that you're working in, and you use this very interesting term, you talked about Mathare as a society, and you talk about the social justice centers as the middle of like a society. Could you just unpack those or look at those particular classes from Fanon looking at it in a particular way, but in the work that you're doing as well? What is that society that is attempting to kind of be put forth?
I'm confirming whether it's for me or for Mwangi. But Mwangi is the most theoretical among us. So I don't know. But as far as the stratification of these classes, I think I hold the position that within the lumpen class, and also because Fanon, even if we unpack Fanon a little bit and we interact with Fanon, as a revolutionary at his time, as a human being, as a doctor of the mind, but also at that time within, you know, the Algerian war, when people are going through the most difficult times, you know, when you read the rest of the art and interact with some of the case studies that he was dealing with, there are some of the cases that we see now, but in a different fashion, because at that time, it is out of colonial oppression. At this time, it is out of colonial oppression. But at that time, when Fanon describes the lumpen proletariat, Fanon describes a lumpen proletariat of people who are completely jobless. They are like the rest of the earth. They are the people that the earth do not, that are not considered human beings or worth of dignity to be called a human being. And of course, that stratification still exists in our society now, which is the lowest stratification within the lumpen class. And at the same time, even within this lumpenized society, and I think I will borrow from some of the rising left thinkers of Africa, who are starting to look at this lumpen proletariat as a class of people who are not specifically the most downtrodden of the earth. It is looking at them as far as their relationship with capital and labor and how consistent they are with their relationship with capital and labor. And of course, we will find that many young people who are coming from the university studies, who are mainly in Africa, who do not secure jobs, so they do not form a stable relationship with capital and with labor. They do not secure any form of contractual employment or even uncontractual employment. They will qualify to be called skilled laborers, considering that they have degrees and whatnot, but they don't qualify as skilled laborers because there are no jobs. And Kenya or Africa, in some parts, are not industrialist countries, so they do not have places where they can offer employment. Other than now that we're seeing the brains of young people being used to, you know, being extracted to go and serve the metropole. But essentially, there are no industries in Kenya or Africa, so these young people who are coming from employment do not then form a stable relationship with capital and labor. They again form a class where they survive on an everyday basis. They can survive from chicanery. They can survive from just shady deals of selling clothes at higher prices so you can keep your extra. They survive in a way that naturally would be how the lumpenized society that Fanon used to describe survive now. So I think we must expand our scope of how we look at the lumpen proletariat. Because they are loom, because I think it's in Brazil where the leader of the MST, his name I will not even attempt to pronounce, but the leader of MST was called to the parliament of Brazil, and he called the parliamentarians because he was asking, how can you form a movement so big that people are volunteering on their own to work for MST, to wake up in the morning and put flags in the market of MST? And he called the parliamentarians, called them lumpen bourgeoisie. And I think it's the first time I had interacted with the concept of the lumpen bourgeoisie. But you see, we have a lumpen bourgeoisie, which means we also have a lumpen proletariat. So when we talk about a lumpen proletariat, we're talking about a lumpenized society, which of course still experiences these levels of violence, still lives within this wretched section of the earth, because they also come from mine. But they are also the bulwark of the labor within the industrial space in Kenya, even if it is a privatized industrial space. They're the ones who clean, they're the ones who make the machinery, they're the ones who do a lot of that work, which they consider skilled, but they have gained skill out of expertise. It is the domestic workers, it is the who have formed a huge bulwark of our society. They are working people. It's just that the law does not specifically recognize them as working people. It is true they live in a lumpenized society, but they're lumpen workers, so they're lumpen, you know, as a class of lumpen proletariat, these domestic workers, it is waste pickers who every day, for as long as there is a system of production, of course, there is a system of waste. So it is these waste speakers, they are waste workers. In China, I think they call them waste workers as well, because they are working people. So the consciousness of these people as workers, say, for example, people who work in the auto industry, the transport industry in Kenya, they are a working force, but people do not recognize them as workers because their work does not pay like normal taxation rates in the country. But in actual sense, they are workers. So a consciousness of these transport workers, a consciousness of these speakers, a consciousness of these domestic workers in itself has the capacity to spark a working class consciousness. For now, these people who are classified as the working class and the proletariat of our society. Because organizing the proletariat of our society, right now they're living in a comfortable way. They are feeling very comfortable. You know, they are comfortable in their oppression, they're comfortable in their struggles, they're comfortable in their dignity. Therefore, sparking their consciousness would have to come from somewhere. And right now, I think our position is that the people that have the capacity, the revolutionary importance to spark working class consciousness are the people that come from this organized society, so that they are the lumpen proletariat. I don't know whether I have addressed the question very well.
To Africa Now. I'm your host, Moise Muntali, and you just heard Wanjira Wahome, who is part of the Kenyan Organic Intellectuals Network, and we're putting this show on as part of the reflections on Fanon would have been 100 years old this year, and also as we continue to celebrate Black August, and this is part of the series we've been having. They're four major people in the Pan-Africanist world who turned 100 this year. There's Patrice Lumumba, Medgar Evers, Malcolm X, and Frantz Fanon. So we're doing that. We're playing this as part of that reflection of these great Pan-Africanist liberation leaders. And also with me in the studio, the virtual studio, is Mayuki Williams, our interim general manager here at WPFW. Or we can call her El Ahefe. Hi, Mayuki. I can see you, but I can't hear you.
I said just Mayuki is fine. It's an honor and a privilege to be on your show. You're one of the strongest programs here on WPFW.
Oh, thank you very much.
So happy to be with you. And folks, you all know how this works. This is an important show that is requesting to get support. We have now just 38 minutes remaining. Our goal is $500. Please go to the phone and call us at 202-588-9739. Mwiza and James produce stellar programming, really inform and enlighten us. Today is an education as well. And if it's something you've come to rely on, please think about making sure that it continues to be here as a service to you. The number is 202-588-9739. Or you can go to the website if you're listening on the internet. It's WPFWFM.org. You can just go to Donate Now button and hit that. Or we also have Cash Apps available. Pull out your Cash App and hit $WPFWFM, or you can text WPFWFM to 801-801. In any functioning democracy or aspiring democracy, diverse perspectives, especially dissenting ones, are vital. You know, that's why we have to keep voices like Waringa Wahome's alive, because it weakens public discourse, it shields corruption, as you can see here in this country now, and leaves injustice unchallenged. And so even James Pope and Mwiza Mutale's, you know, intention of sharing the 100th year anniversary of these men who are so far ahead of their time and sharing these thoughts and talking this information that still pertains to us today is important. So if you appreciate that, please affirm and let James Pope and Mwiza Mutale know that you appreciate the work and respect the information that they provide, that you know. I mean, I do a music show on the air, and the music show, of course, you've got to do a certain amount of research and you have to listen and check out musicians. But the work that these people do on public affairs floors me. It's just so impressive because they go out on their own. They secure these incredible interviews, and then they share the information for us. And if you appreciate and approve that, please call us here, 202-588-9739. 1-800-222-9739, or go to WPFWFM.org and make a pledge of support. What's your goal again, Mwiza?
It is $500. It's an easy lift. I think we can do it. $500.
No question. I know that.
We can do that.
Yeah,
we've done it before. So
you can do much more than that. So I don't know how long your break is or anything, Mouiz. I'm sorry.
Yeah, we still have a minute. And I was just going to echo. I was just going to echo what you said about the shows and they wouldn't have been able to do these shows on another station. It's because of WPFW's mission, longstanding mission since 1977, of making sure that it amplifies the voices in the community. And when we say community, it's not just the in Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. The person you're listening to is actually in Kenya. And there's another a colleague of hers who will be on, you'll hear later, also on. Actually, I think you might have heard him, Nicholas. He's also part of that group, and we had him on a couple of weeks ago. So this is part two of that conversation, and that would not happen in any other station.
It's a wonderful conversation. First, let me start by thanking Leonard from Bowie, Maryland, as well as Felix. I'm sorry, I'm supposed to thank Lindair and Company International in Laurel, Maryland. So thanks the two of them.
Thanks,
for starting.
Yeah.
We want to thank all the folks who called in to Don't Forget the Blues with Clarence, Tony Jordan, as Florence, and Thomas for Tonato. Thank them all very much so that we can, everything went away. But right now we want to continue with the music, continue with the show, and trust that you all are going to call. And I'll let you just close me out, Mouiz, because I did not try to time this out. So you just tell me when to stop.
Oh, no, thanks, Sense. And we're going to go back to the conversation on Fanan with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Part 2. And as you're listening, you can also call. You can multitask at 202-588-9739 to make your pledge. Or on the Cash App, WPFW-FM, and that's the dollar sign WPFW-FM, the Cash App. And here's the conversation.
No, thank you for that. I mean, go ahead, Nicholas, please.
I'll build up where Comrade Warenga has already set the pace. And I think generally what Fanon teaches us is that to be human is to be in struggle, is to fight and to change our material reality. You know, the question we are trying to confront and the key thing at the center of today's world and in Africa is the economic crisis we are facing. And that's why Comrade Warenga has rightly put, you know, the working class at the center of it, trying to fulfill their needs and to live a dignified life for Mathare and to every part of the world. But the global crisis, which is capitalism in its neoliberal face, as we know it here at this point in time, has exhausted even the illusion of democracy that it keeps preaching everywhere. The justice, not only from what is happening in the Sahel, in Africa, and I think which I'd mentioned the other part of the podcast, which I find a lot of inspiration from it. But from the Sahel and to the genocide in Gaza, we are watching the complete inability of the capitalist system to manage life, to provide a dignified life for the working people. It has no solution for a dignified life. It has no solution for the ecological collapse that we see, for the growing inequality, for the alienation and despair that the working people face daily. And Fanon was clear that the reaction for this, because the system, the capitalist system, reinforces and divides, dehumanizes, and justifies violence through an imposed logic to the people. And Warenga had mentioned horizontal violence. And so today, the coloniality of power is globalized. And so it's important because it no longer wears the uniform of the European colonizers, we know it. But the logic remains the same, nevertheless. It is extraction, exploitation, and exclusion. Even worse for the countries in the periphery, like Kenya and the rest of Africa and the global south, of how that surplus value, of how that labor is extracted to sustain the profits, to sustain the economy in the north. It's an important to see as a continuation of that struggle beyond the anti-colonial struggle. been it in the neoliberal face. And it's important when you we read The Wretched of the Earth, we also Fanon's also talks of imperialism, and he says that it never completely leaves. There's a quote, if I can paraphrase, that it imperialism leaves behind germs of rot, which must clinically detect and remove from our land, but from our minds as well. So that rot, it's the internalized domination, internalized colonialism. It is the comprador leadership, that the elite leadership that we have, the elite betrayal of the fruit of independence that happened. And again, Fanon had mentioned an analyze of how that elite class that emerged just after independence was just an intermediary between Africa and imperialism, not to provide any systemic change, but to continue that long route of extraction. So today, that crisis of capitalism is also a crisis of legitimacy, because we see that crisis in Haiti. We see that crisis in Sudan. We see that crisis in Kenya. You know, we had our protests last year. That's a burst of that crisis. So it's a changing world. But how has it lost legitimacy, and how does it inform how we organize and we struggle? One, capitalism has proved to be a system with no future to talk about. You ask the question, what future are we talking about? What vision are we providing for our people? And it's important, because you have to create a worldview of where you are going, because that worldview gives hope. And hope is an important part of the struggle. So, and in that sense, the system has lost legitimacy. We know how it reinforces the hegemony of how it sustains itself, because you have been told numerous times, if you're looking for a solution, just look for it within the current capitalist system. And other systems will be cited as an example of systems that were tried and failed. And so there's been a sense of hopelessness among the people that perhaps these systems look natural. That is a natural system. You exist, you found it, exist in it. And if you want change, just try to find change within it. So we have to continue to struggle and organize that alternative, but most importantly, paint a picture of what kind of society we want to build. So this understanding, it helps us to frame the crisis, not as an unfortunate economic situation, but as the product of a global system built on theft, domination, and colonialism. So Fanon's concept on revolutionary violence, it's not simply about bloodshed, and this has been misconstrued and been misled by liberal scholars who have wanted to convince us of Fanon being mesmerized with violence. It's untrue. So its concept, we can relate that revolutionary violence with also the rapture that we've seen across the world, that we see across the Sahel, that has led to a resurgence of the Pan-African spirit, where Pan-African revolutionaries like Kwame Nkrumah, Amilcar Cabral, Samora Machel are now in the mainstream talk. People are now mentioning like it was in the 60s. That's an important part of the raising of the consciousness. And so those raptures in form of popular are also important. Not without contradictions, not without mistakes, but it's important when we speak that we want to change a society, that we want to create a good society, that we also think of political power. And we are seeing a situation where political power has been captured, as our organizing is a struggle also to capture that political power and change the life of the working class. So that is key, and it informs the task before us. It has been done. We have seen moments historically to know that revolutionary change that changes society is very possible.
Thank you for that. Did you want to, please, Comrade Moringa?
Once introduced, which is a very profound scientific analysis of capitalism and the crisis of capitalism. was introducing a concept of what society we would want to be. I think, for sure, I appreciate that he has sparked the discussion of the resurgence of Pan-Africanism, you know, also that, which is a concept also which Fanon had spoken about, which I think I can only echo on what Comrade Bonga said, that, you know, this resurgence of Pan-Africanism, like the show of what revolutionary violence or revolutionary sort of war can look like in this 21st century and in our societies now, and it can also help us to integrate the question, why Africa, for example, which has had what he has described as ruptures, why Africa, which has had so many ruptures over the past couple of years, I think a decade long of, you know, serious long-running protests, and not just in Africa, but also in many parts of the world, where people have had serious protests, but, you know, none of those protests have led us to, you know, a revolutionary struggle, which is something also that we can use such fun ideas and ideas such as those of Kabar to integrate why such things and, you know, why these protests do not lead to, you know, a revolutionary struggle. And I think some of the errors that we make is that we do not embed the struggle in, you know, our working class sort of consciousness. And a lot of non-working class ideas arise even from NGO spaces, which I think in Kenya specifically, the social justice movement was very critical in criticizing this NGO sort of mentality that is coming up in, you know, in left spaces or in, you know, social justice organizing spaces or social movements where people want to defend their dignity. You know, NGOs come up and eat them up like, I'm looking for that animal that eats things up when you don't see them, but it's just eating it up like a rat at night. You know, these NGOs, how the infestation is affecting the development of these movements, and, you know, development of agents, of people's agents into, you know, advance critical questions that are, you know, existing in our societies. And also, the fact that, I think Comrade Mwangi has brought out as asking, like, what does this political leadership look like? Or what does this alternative economic society look like? Or political economic society look like? That we are, you know, looking to develop and advance. But I think that's also another reason why we can critically look at why these ruptures and these protests that have been going on for a decade. You know, people are also talking about Pan-Africanism, but it is not quite clear which sort of Pan-Africanism that people are talking about. And I think it is also quite critical that, you know, when we talk about capturing political power, we must critically look at, you know, what role revolutionary violence can play in consolidating political power, what role our own social movements can play in consolidating political power, all the political parties that we are affiliated with and capturing this power, and, you know, helping in the consolidation of the power as well through the movements and through, you know, other social forces that exist in our society. But I think I just wanted to enrich Martin on his contribution.
No, thank you for that. And just to kind of drill down just a little bit more, when we talk about extraction and we talk about the position of the different classes in a neocolonial context of Kenya, what does extraction look like in Mathare and Kibera in these particular communities that you all are working in? What does extraction look like? Oh, we'll start with, you know, Rominga, if you can start, and then we'll go to Nicholas.
I think I can start because we lived through what extraction looks like last year.
Yeah.
When the, you know, first of all, looking at Mathare as a society, it is a lumpenite society. It's an informal settlement where public goods such as healthcare and education are a rare thing to find. Perhaps we find one public school, you know, serving a huge population of people. So you can imagine first that the quality, the level of education is also not the best in this society. But imagine living in that kind of a dignified condition, and then comes huge floods, you know, a natural crisis that which can be debatable whether it was natural or not. But a natural crisis that comes and takes away your home, your lives, your property, everything you knew to be home for many, many years. And a government, instead of protecting you, they say that the only means of protection they can offer is.
And again, that's Wanjira Wahome. She's part of the Kenya Organic Intellectuals. She's speaking to us actually directly from the outside Nairobi. That's why the sound is a bit challenging. But these are people working. We're not getting experts just sitting in cafes in Nairobi. These are people working in community, and that's why you're hearing her on the ground with her conversation with James Pope, who is the executive producer and co-host of Africa Now. He's also with me, together with Mayuki Williams, the interim program. Interim general manager here at WPFW. I don't know if who wants to join and start. Mayuki wanted to start the conversation.
Yeah, I want to thank the people who've gotten us started. We only now have $400 to go, and that's attainable in the next 20 minutes. We can do that with your help. There's an easy way of doing it. If four of you go to the go to the internet at wpfwfm.org, or go to the phones at 202-588-9739 and make a call of support and make a pledge as a sustainer. Because with us as a sustainer, you can choose to pay $12.50 a month, which is less than the cost of a movie ticket. It is about what it would cost to get a syrupy, bad-for-you coffee or croissant. And you can dedicate or invest that instead in the WPFW on a monthly basis. That'll be $150 total, and that'll bring you to assist us to getting to the goal much closer. And that'll qualify you to get the Black August Black Liberation DigiPack. And in the DigiPack, we have a lot of different over 50 hours of content speaking to both Black August, George Jackson and the Soledad Brothers, H. Rap Brown, Kwame Ture, June Jordan. We have poets, political activists, political leaders, as well as music and jazz, including Coltrane and Billie Holiday. So it's a very rich piece of material. You can have your own personal library just for $12.50 a month.
So a college lesson at much less the cost of a college lesson.
That's right, much less than what you're getting here, and you're getting excellent and important information that you may not get anywhere else. So please, you all know how important it is to protect, support, and amplify independent media. Now you know the critical juncture that we are at now. So please. Africa Now amplifies marginalized voices. The show centers on affecting Africa and Africa diaspora, topics often ignored or underrepresented in mainstream media. And so you are keeping this alive. You are supporting it. Please show your support and appreciation for it now, because, you know, as Mwiza said, they were talking to Dr. Wahome, and, you know, she was outside the bush. She was working, trying to change the world and making it a better place, you know, one broadcast at a time. She was working in a live area. And so it's really important that we hear that marginalized voice, you know. And Mwiza and James Pope, they curate insightful interviews. They're really good interviewers, as you can hear. And so please support this. Please support WPFW, 202-588-9739.
And James, you can also you can talk to us a little bit about our relationship with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals, because you work with them extensively. You go to Nairobi and beyond in Kenya.
No, thank you for that, and thank you for all of the listeners who will be pledging their sustained support, and also as you kind of support, you know, as time moves on, we always need your support, not just in this particular instance. But yeah, you know, I've been taking students over and engage with the embryonic phase of the Kenyan organic. I saw them develop, right? I saw those young folk who were engaged in many different struggles, particularly in Kibera, in Korogocho, and Mathare, in what is considered to be the slums outside. Well, not outside of Renault, but part of Nairobi. I saw that over the years. So I was in, you know, we was in talks with them for years as they were kind of developing an intentional way to address their own particular issues as we were in conversation with what's happening here in the United States as well. So yeah, you know, we go, as we say, we go way back, but they're younger, obviously. You know, most of them are probably like in their early 20s, early 30s or so. But they're very, very intentional and very, very motivated to change. As we see what's happening in Kenya over the past, not only last year, but also what happened spilled over to this year as well. So this conversation that we had was literally days before
they began to take to the streets. And of course, we was engaged in other conversations. We're able to get it out now. But, you know, yeah, we have a long, extensive relationship with them and other formations in Kenya.
Wow.
So you have that connection. There's nowhere else where you connect the what's happening on the streets in Nairobi and other parts of Kenya together with what's happening on the streets here in Washington, D.C. in that metropolitan area, trying to make a better world. As we say, a better world, one broadcast at a time. And this is what PFW has been doing since 1977, been involved with all the major movements. Like right now, we're since the situation against the Palestinians has been happening, we've been at the forefront of that continuously on various shows, looking at the nuances of the issue, explaining to people what's really happening as well. And I know you support it because that's why we exist today. We're here because you have always been with us through thick and thin, and we value the community support. And this is truly a community station, so we can continue that today by calling 202-588-9739. And how else can people support the station, Miyuki?
Well, again, they can go to the website, but I encourage you all to please give affirmation to the volunteer work that Imwiza and James put into this. They are the highest caliber of programmer that we have here at the station. Not only do they do their work, not only are they at very many of the various protests here and around the world, they also support it. They invest in WPFW just like we're asking you to. And on a continuous basis, I think you put for someone this morning, Imwiza, but...
Yes, you're putting me out. Yes, I did.
But the thing is, it's not just, you know, I'm more of an armchair radio person. I do my little music show from the studio and stuff, but they're in it. They talk to the most, you know, people who are changing the world right before our eyes. And they invest in this work. They give you high caliber work. And if it's something you've come to appreciate, please don't delay. Each show's assigned a specific amount of dollars it has to reach in order for the station to reach its overall goal. We need $400 between now and 2 o'clock. That is attainable. Just need you to go to the phone, please, and make that pledge of support, especially as a sustainer. Get this digipack, expand your personal library with Toni Morrison and Billie Holiday and Coltrane and James Baldwin, as well as many others. But please support the station that supports you. 202-588-9739, 1-800-222-9739, WPFWFM.org, and Cash App. You Cash App, you know, to pay something really quickly, send Cash App to WPFW. Make sure that you put Africa Now. I got to say meow, Africa Now on it somewhere. Or you can just text WPFWFM to 801-801. We try to make it as easy as possible for you to part with the money you want to generously give from your heart to WPFW. Please just do so and give affirmation to these really, really talented and effective gentlemen. 202-588-9739. If you appreciate that you're getting the world view on a weekly basis, that you're hearing voices and issues that you would not otherwise hear, that you're becoming educated and you're getting illumination on various topics, please, 202-588-9739.
And we're going to go back to the final part of the conversation. It's a little short conversation with Nicholas with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals on Fanon.
Sure. This extraction, of course, you can say is multidimensional. It happens in many, it's not extraction, maybe in the form of oil and minerals. It's largely that happens in Africa. But what happens in informal settlements, which is Madare, Kibera, there's also Mukuru. There are other parts of informal settlements that provide labor for these industries. But the extraction is about their human life also. It's labor that they provide. It is land that they occupy and live. They are displaced, that they are attacked for living there, that they live in areas that don't have the basic necessities to provide a dignified life. But there's also extraction of votes from these areas when it comes to election time. That's the only time you'll see informal settlements like Madare gaining relevance in terms of a national discourse. It's when there's a election. There's also a extraction of culture, and a lot of suffering that happens informal settlement. But eventually what happens is that this is converted into value for someone else. So there's extraction in every way. If we mention labor the way we have mentioned, they are underpaid to work in the industry. They are unprotected. So yet they are very essential to the functioning of this capitalist economy, especially in Nairobi. And Warenga knows this when you see in the morning a lot of people walking to work, not even using the buses to work. People walk to and go back home walking because they're underpaid and they cannot be able to afford paying transport. If you combine your paying transport and buying food and paying rent, that money is not enough. So this is cheap. And surplus labor versus exploitation allows these industrialists in Nairobi and even landlords in informal Nairobi to accumulate without paying the true cost of labor. So that one we see. I mentioned that the land occupied by slum dwellers, with time, these informal settlements are becoming they have value in terms of real estate. And so informally settled, but now it's been formally claimed by elites, by business people. And that's why there are many attempts of land grabbing and displacement in many areas that are happening. So eviction sometimes becomes very violent. There is attempts to upgrade these projects, and some are very controversial. We have something like affordable housing, literally displacing many of those, and what they are building is not enough to accommodate what's happening. So yeah, there's that extraction. Maybe finally, because poverty is violent, there's a lot of militarization that happens in informal settlement. There are police patrols, too many, brutality. They are enforced disappearance. Actually, that's what Madare Social Justice was founded in, and the larger social justice movement to counter and to protest the enforced disappearances that were happening. So these are happening in informal settlements. They're not happening everywhere. Also, criminalization of organizing, that resistance, that counter, it does not happen easy. That struggle does not happen easy because there's a confrontation with systemic violence. And Fanon teaches us that violence of the system always returns. And so the state will always is unable under this system to solve the crisis of poverty. The colonial tactics that were used will continue, and that is repressing and suppressing the poor in informal settlements, majorly by extraction of their labor, but among other things that I've mentioned. Yeah.
And again, that's Nicholas Mwangi. And he's with the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network. And also earlier on, you heard Waringa Wahome. And she's also part of the Kenya Organic Intellectuals Network. And they're reflecting on Fanon's work, on their work, as we honor Fanon, who would have turned 100 years old on July 20 this year, just as we honored Malcolm X, who's turned 100 on May 19th. As well as Med Gebers on July 2nd and Patrice Lumumba on July 2nd as well. And with me in the studio is Mayuki Williams and James Pope. I don't know, Mayuki, have some closing thoughts?
Yeah, another incredible show. Thank you very much both to James Pope and to Anwiza Vitale for doing the great work that you do. We also want to thank Anonymous in Silver Spring for making a very generous sustaining pledge. Thank you so much. And thank you for your kind words out there in Silver Spring. They appreciate your work, and they made a
thank you, Anonymous.
Thank you very much. Just only can we all two people who believe in WPFW, who appreciate the great work of Anwiza Vitale and James Pope, who understand the value of what you're getting here at WPFW. Two people to commit $12.50 to WPFW a month. That'll get us to goal. Be three people. We get over goal, but we'll take two people to come make that pledge, or go to the website at WPFWFM.org. Two people talking to one of the people on the phone at 202-588-9739, or using that Cash App. You know how casually and quickly you bring out the Cash App for other things. Pull that out now and then invest in WPFW. Invest to Africa now. Invest in the great work that these gentlemen do. I am always, always floored by some of the contacts they make, the interviews they do, the information that they highlight, because I heard about the Congo issues long time before the major media started picking it up because of Mwiza and James Pope, long before major media got a hold of it. WPFW is in the front of a lot of this stuff. So please stay with us. We want to thank Abraham from Chantilly, Virginia. Thank you so much for your generous pledge of support. We just need a few more of you all to call, and we've got that. We only have 6 minutes left. Doesn't mean you have to stop calling then. You can always go to your computer and make a pledge of support to Africa Now. But just, you know, we're volunteers, okay? I'm working now. I work now at the station, but everyone you hear on the air who does a show is a volunteer. They give of their time, their talent, and their passion to make WPFW stay afloat. Radio is two ways. You have to do your part, too. You have to show your appreciation, your knowledge that you understand what community radio is and how it works. It works by the contributions of individuals just like you. It is powered by the people. You are the power behind WPFW. Please, please invest in what you love and what you appreciate. 202-588-9739. We just need $275 to go. There are many people in the audience who could probably give us our credit card and say, yeah, that's easy. Yeah, let me just take care of that whole. We like it. We get that. But we also like it when 10 people call in with $20.50 or something to get to our goal. There's nothing too small or too large. Just help us get there one pledge at a time. 202-588-9739.
And up next is Headline News, followed by Shine Anna, Hussein Alamin. Thank you very much, Mayuki Williams. And also thank you very much, James Pope, executive producer and co-host, and all the folks behind Africa Now, and also the engineers here at WPFW. And after Shine Anna and Sophie's Power.
4 WPFW News in Washington and WBAI in New York. I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. As Texas state Democrats continue to delay gerrymandering legislation by fleeing to Illinois, Texas Governor Greg Abbott has taken legal action against them. WPFW's Noah Portner has more.
Texas Governor Abbott's most recent move targets the state house's highest-ranking Democrat, Eugene Wu. Today, Abbott filed a petition to the Texas Supreme Court looking to strip Gene Wu of his duties. Here is Gene Wu, chair of the Texas House Democratic Office, in response.
This is just purely insanity. What we're looking at is a governor who is conspiring with a disgraced president to use unconstitutional, illegal racial gerrymandering to destroy our communities. I have a duty to respond to that. I have an obligation to do everything I can to stop that using every legal means necessary.
Removing Wu would be an incredible escalation, but it is unlikely that this will be accomplished. The missing state Democrats will also accrue a fine of $500 per day. This means that the delegation in total is paying some $27,000 a day and will likely spend hundreds of thousands of dollars by the time this political standoff has been resolved. From WPFW News, I'm Noah Portner.
In more news, at least 135 Palestinians, including 87 seeking aid, have been killed and 771 injured in Israeli attacks across Gaza in the past 24 hours, according to Gaza's health ministry. The ministry also reports the number of people who starved to death in the enclave during Israel's war has risen to 193, with the 5 newly confirmed hunger-related deaths coming in the past 24 hours. Meanwhile, the Israeli military put parts of Gaza City and Khan Yunis under new enforced displacement orders today, amid fears that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is preparing to order expanded operations in the territory. Netanyahu is expected to convene a military cabinet tomorrow, where he is expected to push for a total Israeli reoccupation of Gaza, despite serious misgivings from his own senior military officers. Critics of the plan say any push for full occupation would put the lives of Israeli hostages in Gaza at risk, could take between a year and 2 years to fully achieve, and would come at the expense of the country's increasing diplomatic isolation with the international community already horrified by Israel's actions. The United Nations has called reports about a possible expansion of Israel's military operations in Gaza deeply alarming, if true. And Vice President J.D. Vance is expected to